When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumors Show. I am Dan. We have Hartley here as usual. Hartley, good morning, good afternoon, good night, whatever time it is for you. How's it going?
It's good. It's good. It's a quiet time of year in Apple News.
I think we've said that every episode for the last 3 months.
We have said that every episode.
If you're wondering why my intro was so short, I've been talking to Hartley about how I want to change it, but I can't think of anything else to say. And he gently reminded me that we've been doing this for like 150 episodes, so we probably shouldn't change anything. Okay, so I think our intro now just includes what I normally say, and then us telling everyone that it's a quiet time of the year. And then jumping into our
topic.
Or
the alternative, of course, is that we complain that there's too much going on.
Yes. That's usually, it's one or the other. There's never like a moderate amount of stuff happening. It's either too little or too much.
This is the way it always is in the tech community.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, if looking ahead 4, 5, 6 months wasn't enough, let's look ahead a few years, starting with the iPhone. Well, we're only talking about the iPhone because we got a lot of news, weirdly, what was it, over the weekend, this past weekend, just random drops of like pretty significant information regarding next year's iPhone and the year after that. And it's mostly just the fact that the thing that stuck out to me the most is that Apple's now potentially moving to a staggered release. So there would be pro iPhones at one point of the year, and then, you know, 6 months later or whatever, a few months later, it would bleed into. So what does it look like? September being iPhone, but it would be the pro iPhones, the foldables, etc. And then later on, bleeding into the following year, you'll get the standard iPhone and then whatever the E release is, correct?
Yeah, so the iPhone lineup is expanding. Right now, it pretty much consists of four models. Plus, or if we go back a couple of months before the 16E, consisted of five models, if you include that entry level. When you add the foldable, we're moving up to six. And now the SE is no more, and there is this new E line of iPhones, which has a bit of a different character because it's directly related to that main line of iPhones. So it looks like what Apple is going to do is release four of them in the fall and two of them in the spring.
That makes sense. Samsung kind of does the same thing. They do their foldables at a different part of the year and then kind of do the flagship phone. Weirdly, they do the flagship phone like January, end of January, early February, and then they do foldables in the summer. I kind of wish it was flipped. I just feel like the flagship phone should come out around the same time as the iPhone. I don't know why I feel like that they should do that. I think more for me of like, oh, these two phones are fresh in each other's minds and like we can do comparisons and stuff like that. And it just gives it that like, this is the smartphone time of the year. And so if you want a new phone, you've got a bunch of different options and the latest phones are coming out around the same time. But I don't know if anybody really truly cares about that. But with the iPhone, I mean, this is big. When was the last time we've really done this? I know there have been times where phones have been staggered, but that was mostly due to like issues, correct? And it's only been like a month.
Yeah, so the iPhone 12 lineup was pushed back to October rather than September. But that was obviously COVID year. So that was understandable that year. But generally, Apple has stuck to a fall release date. And the SE models, with the exception, I believe, of the first generation SE, have all released in the spring. So we have had a taste of this. But the fact is, the iPhone lineup is expanding significantly, and the way that these devices are positioned is changing quite considerably. And this does cause some problems. Because if Apple was to release six new iPhones simultaneously in September, how is it supposed to market those? How are ordinary users supposed to understand the differences between these six different devices? At that point, Apple, if it's buying up billboard space, which proportion of billboards are for which models?
Yeah.
Those distinctions are really hard to explain. So separating it a little bit makes sense. And I think there are other reasons for this as well. You rightly mentioned that Samsung staggers their releases also for very similar reasons. And so it allows Apple to compete directly.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also internal reasons for this, because we know that Apple is trying to move manufacturing away from China toward India. And the switch to manufacturing all six models in India simultaneously would be a massive task. But if they are staggered, it enables Apple to ramp things up more slowly. And in the long term, diversify its supply chain a little bit less instantaneously. And that should improve reliability and actually get things going in the direction that they need to be.
So, all right, let's draw this out year by year. So this year we have the 17. That'll come in September, and that should be normal, correct? We'll get the full lineup, both pros and non-pros, right?
Yes. So that will be the iPhone 17, 17 yep. Air, and then the 17 Pro and Pro Max.
And then we bleed into 2026, just like we did this year with the 16E. So now we'll have the 17E, what, maybe around that February, March timeline?
Yes. Although it is still undecided if there will be a 17E. It's not clear if the E line is going to be on a two-year cycle.
Okay, that's my next question.
Because if you think about it, that device doesn't really need an annual update.
No.
It's mainly reusing components from previous devices. Effectively, the iPhone 16E is an iPhone 14 with the camera of an iPhone 15 and the USB-C port of an iPhone 15. So it's just kind of merging two different older devices together. In future devices, there are definitely places for it to go. So we can add things like Dynamic Island. We can add a faster chip. But what else can you really do on an annual basis? I personally don't think there will be a 17E.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you think of the way that they have titled this device, the 16E is very happy to sit in the lineup alongside the 17 lineup
yeah.
for the whole life of that iPhone lineup. And then the iPhone, if we then wait until the iPhone 18, that will be out alongside existing iPhone 18 models through to the release of the iPhone 19. So then you have the 18 and the 19 on sale together simultaneously. So it works.
Okay, so then let's jump to where this really starts then. So fall of 2026, this is where we'll start to see the stagger, correct? Here's where I have an issue with this, because if there's no more Plus, right, and the 18 Air takes over, and there's not going to be, well, I guess in this year there would be an 18E, but then when you start going into the next year where there isn't one, is there just going to be the standard iPhone and that's it? Or is there a chance they bring the Plus back for, since they're staggering it, it kind of separates itself. Like, does the Air really need to replace the Plus if once it becomes staggered? You know what I'm saying? Or is it just...
Do you mean in fall 26?
So in fall 26, let's just go through it, and then I'll highlight what I mean. So we're expecting, the rumor is, the 18 Air, the 18 Pro, 18 Pro Max, and then the first foldable phone. So four phones in the fall, like we normally get, but these are just different phones. It's not going to be the standard iPhone. It's going to be basically the Pros and then the more unusual ones with the foldable and the Air. And then when we bleed into 2027, we have stated the 18 and most likely the 18E if it's on an, you know, every 2 year cycle. But then when it gets to the 19 is where I'm saying, like, there wouldn't be a 19E. So would it just be the 19? I feel like it gets a little weird, right? Even with the 18E in this launch, I just feel like what you said, how do you market this? Like, who cares if the 18 come, you know, when that comes out? Like, I just feel like it's going to be weird.
I don't know, though, because there isn't that much enthusiasm around those entry-level models anyway.
Right.
So they're a stone's throw away from the E-line as it is. So to release them annually in the spring, whether that's alongside an E-model or not, I think makes a lot of sense, especially now that the Air is really splitting itself out from that standard model. It actually would make more sense to me personally to also release the Air in the spring.
I think so too, yeah.
And then that way you would get three models in the spring and three models in the fall.
I agree.
It's very clearly separated along the lines of entry-level devices that are below $900 and then pro devices that are above $1,000.
Which is why I kind of felt like they could keep the Plus around to do that if they wanted to. You know, here's the Plus, here's the regular, if you wanted two different sizes of the exact same phone.
I think the issue is that no one's buying the Plus.
Right.
And that's why they've moved to the Air.
I feel like the issue for people who usually upgrade their devices in September and kind of go on that cycle, you know, every 2 years in September when they're up and they're due, they want to do it. I think people are just going to get the ones that are available in September, and then there goes a lot of sales for now the entry level one as well. And also, do they do an event? Like, that seems kind of strange. Is that just going to be a press released phone then, basically, with a little like video announcement?
I can see it being a fully fledged event. I mean, Apple typically does do spring events. We haven't had them every year, but I would say most previous years we have had a spring event. And this is just another couple of devices that can be added to that alongside iPhone updates and new MacBook Air models and whatever else it is that we receive at that time of year. And ultimately, all of the technology that will be going into those two entry-level models, we will have seen the previous September. We'll know what the chip is.
Right.
Really, it's the Air where we will see that showcase, that entry-level camera technology and chip technology will be in that device first.
So it's why I'm kind of like, why do we need an event then? You know, just make it a press release with the video and just have it drop, I guess. But then I just feel like the regular iPhone just loses a lot more luster if it hasn't already.
The regular iPhone is in a very weird place as a result of this. That's my biggest takeaway from this rumor.
Yeah.
My expectation before hearing about this, and going back maybe 6 months in the rumor cycle when we heard about the iPhone 17 Air, was I anticipated that the super thin design of the Air would trickle down to the smaller standard model, and there would be two Air models. That's what makes most sense to me, because it's strange to have an entry-level model that actually has a slightly different feature set. So it will have stereo sound. It will have, at least this year, a Qualcomm modem. It will also have spatial video capture because it has the ultra-wide camera. All of these things will be absent on the Air, and yet that is a cheaper device. That seems like a strange buying decision to put an ordinary customer in, especially one that is not pro-oriented. So my expectation was that Apple would ultimately miniaturize all of that technology and bring it down to the standard model. It doesn't look like that's happening. It looks like the standard model will stick around. But then the question is, why would you buy that when you are caught between two more compelling devices? Let's go forward to with the iPhone 18 lineup. You will be choosing between buying an iPhone 18e and an iPhone 18 Air. Why would you go for the middle? Why would you go for that middle 18? Because you want the ultra wide camera? I don't really get it. It seems like a very strange device to me. I actually wouldn't be surprised if in as much as this roadmap is being planned out now, and it definitely looks like the entry-level iPhone is moving to the spring in whatever form that will be, if long-term the 18E and 18, 19E and 19 become the same device, and the E or the SE lineup, whatever you want to call it, that entry-level line just disappears, or it becomes branded as something else, and then we move to something that is a little bit more like how it worked. Do you remember when we had the iPhone XR and the iPhone 11, where there were three main iPhones? We had the iPhone 11, 11 Pro, and 11 Pro Max. I could see it ultimately ending up like the iPhone 19 Air, 19 Pro, 19 Pro Max, and then you have this SE model floating as the fourth option, and then the foldable at the higher end. But it just seems strange to have two of those with slightly different features at the entry level. There's something about that that doesn't sit right with me, but I guess Apple doesn't have the sales information yet about how the E lineup will sell long term here. Are people going to continue to be interested in that after the release of the iPhone 17 lineup this year? And also, how many people are going to be tempted to buy the iPhone 17 Air?
I'm so curious about that phone. I really am. I'm curious about both of these companies. Samsung is what I'm, doing the Edge, and then the iPhone with the Air. Like, how do you market this to your existing customers, to your new customers? Is it actually going to succeed? Like, I don't know. We talked about this a little bit last week. I saw those dummy units, and I'm more inclined to want to try it now after seeing just how thin it is. But I wish it wasn't such a like budget device in the sense of what you're losing out on, you know?
I think you're losing out on very little.
The cameras is really the only thing.
That the average user, I think that for... And by average user, I don't mean someone that actually is not into their tech. I mean someone that upgrades maybe every 2 years,
mm-hmm.
Has a passing interest in the new iPhone, but it isn't the center of their world like it is for us.
Right.
I think that for that customer, the Air represents pretty much the best option. Okay, you're losing out on stereo speakers. You're losing out on millimeter wave 5G this year. No, you're losing out on... that. Always on display, and you're losing the 5x telephoto and also the 0.5 ultra wide. But I don't know how many ordinary people think, I really need that ultra wide camera. That ultra wide camera is a deal breaker. And if it is, buy a pro model. But I don't think it's a significant number of ordinary users. I think ordinary users will look at this device and think, this is a very interesting screen size that is in between a Pro and a Pro Max. And also has a design that is very striking and clearly is something different and feels more premium than an entry-level model has in the past. I actually wouldn't be surprised if Apple goes for some more muted colors for it to just make it feel a little bit more pro.
I feel like most people kind of fall into the... Or at least most people that I interact with on a regular basis, you know, a lot of the people my age now are parents with younger kids, and they have like their needs are, can I scroll social media? Can I send messages via iMessage? Can I look at my emails and my calendar? And then what are the cameras? I need the cameras because that's what I use on a regular basis. So like my wife in particular wouldn't care about any of the stuff that you mentioned aside from the cameras. And I don't know that she uses, I'm not just saying like, I genuinely don't know if she uses the ultra wide a lot. I'm sure there has been times, you know, when trying to get everybody in a picture, but like, would she miss it? I honestly have no idea. Just as long as it takes good photos still.
And Apple's 48 megapixel camera wide is a really good camera. Mm-hmm. And the ability to crop in and get that 2x throw is excellent. And I actually think that the iPhone 16e is a great example of this because that's effectively all you can do with that device. But I think it's really all you need.
Yeah.
How many situations are there when an average person needs more than that? I know I'm very attached to my telephoto, and I
was going to say, I wouldn't want the telephoto, but I've been making it work. I'm trying to do a video where I'm just switching to all of the low end like devices or the entry level devices and seeing like how, or if at all, if my life is truly changing on a regular basis. And like, I've been using the 16e. I've been able to make up for some of its shortcomings. I wonder if the 17 Air is going to have some of the shortcomings, like no MagSafe. Do we know about that? I'm guessing. I don't know how they can fit all that in with it being so thin and everything, you know?
No idea. That's actually a very interesting point.
That's the one thing that I really didn't love, is that it has no MagSafe, and I use MagSafe charging almost exclusively. And really, the biggest thing is it's awful that regular wireless charging is so slow now when I'm using it. But my fix for 90% of my issue with no MagSafe is that I can't just stick it on the dock that I have on my nightstand. So I bought a case, which I don't love cases, but on a smaller phone like this, I actually don't mind it. And so I just bought a really thin MagSafe, you know, magnetic case and just put it on my dock, and it works fine. It's the same hold. Only problem is it's just really, really slow at charging. So, yeah, that's about it. Otherwise, like, I made up for that. The camera really hasn't been an issue so far. I'm going to a concert tonight, so we'll see when I'm kind of far back and I want to zoom in with my telephoto just how upset I'm going to be that I don't have it. But that's the only scenario, really, that I can see myself as someone who does that quite frequently is going to have an issue with no telephoto. But otherwise, on a regular basis, I don't run into that issue. So what do you think? You think you should get a 16E and do this experiment. I think that would be fun.
I think I would be okay with it if I had to. I think a really interesting part of this sort of look ahead is actually the cameras on the foldable iPhone.
Yes.
Because I'm very attached to the telephoto, but I think, and we don't know this yet, that the telephoto is the camera that is going to be lost on the foldable.
That's a shame.
So for some reason, the foldable iPhone, when that releases late next year, will have two rear cameras. It's not going for the 16E, just one. But Apple hasn't released a phone with only a telephoto and a wide since, I think it's the iPhone XS was the last phone that did that. Which is a considerable amount of time ago. And the reason it did that is because you couldn't crop in on the sensor. Things are different now. And as much as I would like to believe that Apple will go for the telephoto and the wide, because it may recognize that not a huge amount of people really do use that ultra wide. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I sense that that is not as popular as the telephoto. Although I suppose they must know that because they still put the ultra wide on all the entry level models. So yeah, maybe I'm completely wrong.
That's what I'm wondering the same thing. I'm with you. I don't know who uses the ultra wide more than this is the time where we need everyone, whether you're an average user or not, like just please comment if you're on YouTube or like figure out a way to get in touch with us and let us know what do you use more out of the three or two cameras? Or if you have one camera, then I guess we know your answer, but what do you use more, the ultrawide or the telephoto? Because that is truly, maybe we should put a poll up too on Mac Rumors. I think that would be a good social media poll because I would love to know that information. Because I, in my mind, the perfect phone needs to be at least telephoto and main. I could do with or without the ultra. I'm guessing you're the same.
I use the ultrawide now more than I ever have, admittedly. Because previously it just, well, I actually don't know. I have had situations where like, for example, I flip the phone around, take like a group selfie, and I want to use the back cameras. And to fit everyone in and get a different perspective, I'm now more likely to use that ultra wide. Previously, that was just not viable. It was not a good enough camera to do that. Now it is. When I've been in a low light situation and I like want to get a picture of like a cityscape or something, I would not have done that before with the ultra wide. Now I do. I'm not saying I use it a lot. Mm-hmm. I use it now more because that sensor is significantly better on the iPhone 16 lineup. So I would not like it to disappear. And I can feel already this vague sense of anxiety washing over me about the first foldable that I'm going to lose a rear camera if I want that device.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll make up for it.
You'll also lose Face ID. That's the other thing. This device is going to be weird. We're moving into the era of weird iPhones.
Yeah, and well, okay, so let me touch on a couple of things you said. Number one, what more companies need to do, and I know others have done this before, but it's all Android, obviously. why are we not putting a ultra wide camera in the front of the device? Why are we not investing more into that? That is where it makes the most sense. I know
it is an ultra wide camera.
No, I mean, like, let's make two dedicated, let's put two dedicated cameras and then boost the quality of them significantly. So one focuses as a main sensor and then one is your ultra wide. And then you can, and people have done this before. And by people, I mean companies have done this before. And so why are we not investing into two good lenses on the front that, you know, can take a nice sharp normal selfie? And then I know you have that expansion. It's not good. It's not enough. Like, you need a little bit more. So let's just put two dedicated cameras for that. That's where it makes sense. Then I could do away without, you know, because I feel like the ultra wide, yeah, for group pictures, if you're not in the group and you're trying to get, yeah, I get that. But, like, I don't know, take a couple steps back. But when you're doing this, my arms can only extend so much. You know, like, what am I supposed to do to get everybody in on a selfie where you want to see what's going on? So I commend you for turning your phone around and trying to do that. Well, that's where the foldables become interesting, by the way, is because you can, you know, unfold it and see it. And being, you know, somebody who's used a couple of foldables in my life here, I will say, I used to be, when Face ID came out, I was not for it. I loved Touch ID and I really missed the home button. And I admittedly was probably wrong in the sense that I just wanted to go back, or I wanted both options. Give me a fingerprint sensor underneath the display and have Face ID, which I still would lobby for that to this day. But going back to Touch ID, specifically Touch ID being on the power button, I do not love that. Maybe Apple will be able to get it right, but I feel like a lot of phones, it's just bad. Like, the power button's not big enough and it's just in a weird spot. And I don't know, you can get away with it. It's fine. And a lot of those phones have like a face unlock. Do you think maybe they could do a face unlock feature, or would they not do that?
I can't see that happening.
Yeah. That's annoying. Sorry. My voice is getting a little raspy here, but I don't know. I just think that that's going to be rough. Do you think so? Or are you kind of like going to give them the benefit of the doubt?
I think this first generation foldable is going to be a very strange device that there will be a lot of sacrifices with. Yeah. The Air, a lot of customers will be willing to make that sacrifice, because if you're coming from maybe an iPhone 15 and your contract is coming to an end, the iPhone 15 Air, the iPhone 17 Air represents an interesting upgrade, especially if you're coming from an iPhone 15 Plus or 14 Plus. And likewise, even if you're coming from a Pro model, say you're coming from an iPhone 14 Pro, the 17 Air is a pretty good device to replace that. The issue with the first foldable is that because it's going to be the most premium iPhone, they are trying to tempt people like me that go out and buy the Pro iPhone every year. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to ask users that are interested in the standard models to make sacrifices like having eSIM as the only option and having stereo, not having stereo speakers. But if you're asking Pro users to, okay, give up the ultra wide, give up Face ID, give up stereo speakers, and whatever else may be the case with this device that you'll have to let go of, that's quite a big ask. And that's why Apple will continue selling the iPhone 18 Pro Max alongside this, for those users who don't want that.
So this is where it gets a little weird. Just kind of looking at the foldable and the 18 Pro and some of the rumors. My first question, which might be really dumb, and, you know, just take it easy on me here, but what's the reason why we can't get Face ID on the front display, on the outer display, but we can get it in the Air? I'm assuming it would just be because of the thickness of the device, right?
Because there's a display on both sides.
So they can't... I feel like there's got to be a way they...
I mean, eventually, I would hope that's the direction it goes in, but there are physical challenges to creating a device that's this thin with this much technology.
Yeah, no one's done it, so I'm not going to like harp on... I'm just genuinely curious. I guess we haven't had another display on an iPhone like this, so I'm just not used to that. But like, my next thing is that with the 18 Pro and Pro Max being rumored to feature an under display Face ID for the first time, is that possible then for the next device, you know, foldable? Or could it be possible that this rumor's wrong and they can figure out a way to get it on both at the same time?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think that the foldable, for this to have emerged about Touch ID, it must be fairly locked in now. I mean, iPhones usually run on a roughly a 24-month development cycle when things really ramp up. Mm-hmm. The foldable has been in the works for much longer. And if this is now expected in September next year, we are well on the way to that device being finished internally, at least, at Apple and running its early engineering validation tests. So I would be surprised if that was the case. Second generation foldable, third generation foldable, maybe that's when they bring Face ID and Touch ID, because Touch ID will already exist on that device. And at that point, you can sell that as an iPhone Ultra for $2,500 with both of these authentication methods, because it's just taken to the next level. But it is an interesting conundrum that's going to emerge in the iPhone lineup from 2026 onwards, because power users like us are going to have to make a decision. Do we want the Pro and Pro Max, which ostensibly will have better technology? It will have better cameras. It will have Face ID. Undoubtedly, it will have better speakers. Certainly will have better battery life. Or do you want the foldable experience and potentially what will be like an iPhone Ultra style experience at the highest end? And even for a lot of people, knowing that they have the highest end iPhone is a big deal. Mm-hmm. What do you do? And that actually gets even worse in 2027, because in 2027, we're expecting this 20th anniversary iPhone, which will be a total redesign of those Pro models that's expected to be basically no front-facing cutouts for anything. Everything will be integrated into the display. There will be no pinhole.
I forgot to mention that, by the way. I didn't mention that. So the 18, to be clear, Face ID would go under the display, but the camera still will not.
Yes.
But then when we get to the 19, like you just said, everything
under the display. And it will be apparently completely edge-to-edge. So there should be virtually no bezel.
It's what we've been wanting.
And there should be a lot more glass on the device. And it's apparently a very complicated design that uses glass very extensively. So this potentially is going to be something where the glass of the front display waterfalls over the edges in a way that we've never really seen before on an iPhone. But also there'll be this second generation foldable that's alongside that at a higher price point. So which do you go for?
I mean, if I'm still doing this job, I will be fortunate enough to have both of them. But which one do I use is the real issue. I would say foldable this coming, the first gen, I'm definitely going foldable. I mean, we have to, right? We've been wanting it for so long. I'm not shutting up about it for years. And we finally get one and I'm just going to, what, get the 18 Pro Max? That sounds boring. I gotta go full head on, right?
I think so. That's probably what I will do. But I can also see a situation where I think maybe I'll wait for the second generation.
No, don't do that.
And then I'll think, oh, no, but there's this 20th anniversary iPhone. I mean, quite honestly, I don't know if this is good for the iPhone lineup.
What, the foldable?
Just this whole situation, it feels like the iPhone lineup's getting very big and very messy. I mean, let's consider where the lineup will be by spring of 2028. So what will the lineup look like then? You'll have the iPhone 19e, and presumably you will still have the iPhone 18 and maybe 18 Air still on sale. You'll have the iPhone 19 and 19 Air. Mm-hmm. You'll have the 18 Pro, 18 Pro Max, and then the second gen foldable, all on tables at Apple stores, all of those options simultaneously. Just for iPhones.
And then a few years after that, we're going to take the Air, and then we're just going to close it this way, and we're going to have a clamshell foldable. I actually don't know if that's true. I thought that would be the first one, to be honest with you. I'm surprised
Apple's
doing
the book.
I'd like
to see that happen eventually.
Well, I feel like the Air now is a stepping stone. Am I wrong? Like, that is what the next...
I mean, the Air is effectively... The Air this year is trying to resolve a lot of problems for Apple, because the Plus only accounts for about 5% of iPhone sales. It's not really enough to justify its existence. it's caught between the standard iPhone and the Pro model. So you need to offer something different. And a lot of people just like to buy the Pro because they feel like it's better. So in offering something that is thinner and a radically new design, you tempt those customers away. Mm-hmm. But also, it allows Apple to have a reason to engineer something that is extremely thin so that when that chassis is doubled over in a different design, Apple is used to making these engineering sacrifices, understanding how all of this technology needs to work in an extremely thin enclosure for the foldable. It's a test run device for that, which makes a lot of sense. But I think that it's just a little bit concerning to me in the long run here that there's no commitment about what the iPhone lineup is about. Is Apple all in on foldables? Is a foldable a better iPhone experience or is it not? Is someone that wants just an entry-level iPhone, should they get an iPhone 18 or do they get an 18e? Or should they buy an 18 Air? And it seems like Apple doesn't actually have the answers to this. Apple's solution going forward, as iPhone upgrades have got smaller and smaller every year, is to actually present a wave of devices with very different capabilities and designs and say, just pick whatever seems like it's right for you. Mm-hmm. And that is a world away from when it used to just sell like the iPhone 5 and there was just the iPhone 5 and you could pick it in white or black.
Well, I know this is slightly out of order and I apologize unless you're done talking about all the other stuff, but like, right now we're just building up to an explosion, and when that explosion happens there will be no more iPhones because Eddie Q says that in 10 years we may not have one. So maybe Apple is just making up for lost time within those 10 years and be like, here's every iPhone you guys have been clamoring for. We're trying all sorts of different ones. Take them all. And then eventually AI and VR and AR is just going to take over and you're not going to need it.
I can believe it. And I think what was really interesting about Eddie Q's comments here is that this was not Apple marketing Apple Intelligence. This was not Apple
trying to
convince
you. They better not be marketing Apple Intelligence right now.
Apple wasn't trying to convince anyone with these comments about the future of AI. It was actually trying to downplay its power and to specifically say that in 10 years' time, people may not even need an iPhone at all because of AI, because that's how fast it's moving. It's very interesting considering that, as we've discussed, OpenAI are developing their own smartphone. I can see this being the future. I mean, we talk about how there are frustrations about what Apple Intelligence can do now, but in 10 years' time, what will Apple Intelligence be able to do? When Apple Intelligence is present in your AirPods, which have cameras that face outwards so that they can, with visual intelligence, have a complete understanding of what's going on in your environment at all times that you're wearing them. Your Apple Watch also has a camera to be ambiently aware of everything that's going on. How important will it be to use a smartphone for many of your everyday tasks? And yes, you know, if you want to scroll through TikTok, you're going to need a device to do that on. But in terms of day-to-day tasks that you actually use your phone for, like checking your emails, responding to your emails, looking up what time a restaurant closes or whatever, the idea of going to Google, like opening your phone, going to Google, or typing in the name of a restaurant and saying like closing time, you just won't do that anymore. I mean, that's already basically phasing out now. I do that stuff less and less already because I am replacing so many of my searches with things like ChatGPT.
Give me a few examples. I saw you tweeted that yesterday. What are your like normal Google searches that you're now doing on? Can you even ask? I guess you could probably ask ChatGPT. I've never done this before. I usually like save my requests for like things that are more complex or like something generative. But what time does McDonald's on this area open? Like, would it tell me that?
ChatGPT isn't the best for that because you're better off using an AI dedicated search engine with better search features. Like Perplexity is very good at that.
Okay.
What I end up using ChatGPT for is the kind of browsing that I think many of us used to do, where if we want to learn something, or say I'm want to find a recipe for something, what I would have done in previous years is type into Google, whatever it is, recipes, look for the recipe and find it. Now I don't do that. Now I just ask ChatGPT for a recipe and I say to it, oh, well, I want to make this quantity. So that's what I want. And it that's will just spit that out. And I do that for, like, you can do that for workout routines. Previously, you might have Googled, you know, new exercises that you can do or to understand things about how many calories you're burning or whatever. And you would have to learn this information and get it from some sort of article that has been written online or a blog or whatever it may be. That just isn't necessary now. And say you want, I don't know, say you're learning a new sport and you want to understand how the scoring works. Before, you would have had to have gone to a website and read a guide on it that would have been written by a person. Now you can say to ChatGPT, explain to me how scoring works in this sport, and say to it, explain it to me more simply.
Well, when the Browns play in London this year, I'm going to need you to brush up on your football
rules,
so that you know what's going on. While you were saying that, you got me lost into this now. Why have I never thought about asking for a recipe for like, I've been searching for, I got a Ninja Creamy from my birthday. And I wanted to make like healthier ice cream, you know, you can make like high protein stuff, and I just couldn't find like really good succinct like options. There were so many different articles and Reddit threads, and I'm like, I don't want to keep, like, I've been putting it off because I didn't want to keep looking for it. I just typed it in literally 5 seconds. I've got a pretty good looking recipe that and tells me everything that I need to do. Like, why have I not thought about this? I've been using it for like making dumb images the whole time.
It's also great for purchasing decisions that ordinarily you may not have got such direct answers about. If you're weighing up between buying two things, or you want to understand a selection of products that a company has and the differences between them, it is so much more useful for average search queries. And as search gets better, because it's getting better all the time in terms of how much information it has indexed, I just can't see, even a year from now, where I am using Google for 90% of the things that I search. It will be ChatGPT or equivalent AI services for 90%. Google will always have a place for when you want to do that traditional thing of trying to find specific articles. Like if you were doing a piece of academic research, it may be more beneficial to actually read specific web pages, things in those sorts of situations. Even in a journalistic context, similar to what we do, we are going to want to go to the actual sources of that information. But for the average person, I find it hard to believe that many people will be Googling things in the way that they have for very much longer. So I can believe that iPhone usage will change and the iPhone will become a lot more like the iPad, where it is used for content consumption. You'll use it to take pictures and you'll use it for social media. But I don't know that you'll actually use it for utilitarian tasks in the way that you currently do.
In that point, I would go for the smallest and thinnest iPhone I can possibly get. If I'm not using it all the time and I'm just using it for a few one-off things that require a better display and obviously cameras and stuff, like why would I need...
And a foldable will be perfect for that. If smartphones tilt toward content consumption, that makes a lot of sense. And ultimately, these devices have got to feed information to each other in the long term to provide a better experience. But I think the fact that AirPods are getting cameras in the immediate future really tells us all that we need to know about how Apple has already considered that. And similarly, with the idea of putting visual intelligence on the Apple Watch, so that you can just point your watch at whatever it is you're doing and get information about it.
Yeah, I'm on board. So, I mean, that's pretty much what we're looking at right now. I mean, I think we've touched on all of the major rumors that have come out over the last week. I just find it funny that like we're 6 months away-ish from a new iPhone, and we're getting all of this stuff for next 3 years, basically. You know, such is life. But would love to hear from you all in the comments down below. Let us know any of the things that we talked about. Specifically, I really want to know if you're still using ultra wide or telephoto. Like, I'm just more...
I agree.
I just really need to know what everybody's using. I think we should put up a poll. I'm going to see if we can do that now. But yeah, let us know and we'll catch everybody in the next episode.